Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Welcome to Spin the Rally Pod, your one-stop podcast for all things rallying and the team today that have assembled Avenger-like are Mr. Luke Barry, Deputy Editor of Dirtfish.com. Good morning, Mr. Luke Barry.
Good morning, Lisa, and I respect that energy. That was not befitting of what we had about 30 seconds ago before we started recording, so that was fantastic.
Always get chucked under the bus with these guys, don't I? Mr. George Donaldson, former motorsport team director.
Good morning,
and technical
Lisa.
Guru. I'm going to give you technical guru and all things technical as well.
Hardly a guru, but they are very, very happy to take that mantle on and do my best.
Okay, well, I'll chuck the guru mantle. It's brilliant. It's going so well, this. Just keep going. We'll give the guru mantle to Mr. David Evans, who is... I've forgotten your title. I've completely forgotten your title. Editor? Senior staff writer. Just, there we are.
Well, senior bottle washer. And, yeah.
Good morning. No, I have to say, I'm making my excuses. My brain is a bit fogged up because I've got the Rona. Tested positive for COVID over the weekend. And apart from having a very heavy cold, and yes, the brain fog is a thing, definitely a thing.
We'll agree with that, Lisa.
I'm very lucky that it's not confined me to bed or anything like that. And you're very lucky, clearly, that I am here to host this with such competence and skills that you'd hardly even know. The other thing I'm going to admit, chaps, is that I'm a bit of a passenger on this one because I've just spent 2 weeks watching Wimbledon. So while I get my neck used to looking right and left without actually straining it, I'm going to sit back and enjoy you telling me, Mr. David Evans, because I'm starting with you, what I can expect for Estonia Week. Estonia. Which always means summer and sunshine and gloriously beautiful pictures.
I certainly did last year. It was genuinely one of the hottest rallies we went on last year. It was an absolute scorcher.
I've just realised, gang, as well, that genuinely means that possibly one of David's least favourite events.
It wasn't a great one because Dirtfish HQ in Estonia as well was in it. Was some really nice kind of oldie worldy apartment thing in the centre of Tartu that came without any air conditioning. And it, oh my goodness me, it was absolutely roasting. Our lovely cameraman, Gary, ducked out halfway through and just couldn't live with it. So he went and found a hotel room with some aircon. But no, it was a bit of a shocker last year. So it was, I think we've been informed, that was a bit of an exception. And I think, George, you'll know far better. I know weather's a little bit down the order today, so I'm perhaps jumping the gun here a little bit, but we don't expect anything in the sort of 30s this week, do we?
Stand by. Stand by, David.
Sorry, I've choked you under the bus.
We had 30 degrees here yesterday in Perthshire.
I was going to say, yeah, the UK is so toasty next week.
This week even.
Yeah, I suppose it is this week.
Yeah, it is. It is this coming weekend.
Oh, so, there's nothing more exciting than waiting for someone to give you a weather forecast on a podcast. Thanks for tuning in. At Dirtfish Rally, don't forget to write us a review.
So it is. Last year it was very, very hot. And the other thing that was really weird last year as well is it brought out some huge bugs, which honestly, we drive through sort of swarms of these things. And actually, should I put a picture on the... I was going to say on the group chat. That wouldn't really work for the wider listener, would it? But I could.
No, why not pop it on our Instagram account at Dirtfish Rally?
we're not allowed to put anything other than beautiful pictures on Instagram account.
Okay.
But equally, I could put it on Twitter, couldn't I, Luke?
You could. Yeah, you don't need to ask my permission for that. They'll go for it, David. You're the boss.
Really? Right. But in the meantime,
I can give you a forecast. look, guys, not so warm.
Hey.
Low to mid-20s this week, and then over the weekend, just under 20 degrees. Reasonable breeze.
Under 20 degrees.
And just to prove that that Mr. Rovan Perra is not just a rally god, he may also be a weather god, because it says it's going to rain. And if it rains, rains, he can win.
David's just got so excited.
Unbelievably.
Yeah.
I've just sent you all, I've just sent the little group, we will put this on social media. Look at that thing. So there's not really any context. That's sitting on the side of the car. But it was huge.
There's no context with that either. But, I mean, that could be the size of my little fingernail.
No, it was big. It was kind of the sort of...
Yeah, that's big.
Of a little finger. It was a big thing. Right. So, Luke, now I've sent that on WhatsApp, I'm putting you in charge of putting that on social media. So don't disappoint people. But last year, so the whole place was just full. And you drive along and it would be like... as these things were just hitting the car. It was like something out of a horror movie. Anyway, back to rallying. Or let's start with some rallying.
Yes, let's do that.
Let's talk
Spin
rallying.
The rally pod.
Yes.
That's what we're called.
Let's do that. I have to say, always, Estonia is quite a new one, isn't it? This is the third Estonian WRC round. Of course, before that, we have had WRC promotion rounds, which have also been enormously exciting in Estonia. But for me, you know, the summer was always about fast gravel. It was always about Finland. Now we have two goes at it, and it's Estonia and Finland. So it's the one that, you know, I love Acropolis, Sardinia, Mexico, these kind of rough gravel places.
Yeah,
but,
me too.
But this is the one. These two, Estonia, Finland. This is where you see the speed, the jumps, the cars flying. There is something very, very special. You know, Finland is regarded as a spiritual home of rallying. Estonia is just across the water. Shortest flight you ever take, literally up and down from Tallinn to Helsinki, Helsinki to Tallinn, whatever. It's a great place. And massive, massive number of fans. And Oit Tanak's going to win because he's a local and he's a friend of Dirtfish. So there we are. Can I go back to bed now? That's me done.
We have the power to change things, do we?
Mm. Okay.
Of course we do.
That was a pretty good preview, that, David, actually.
Oh,
that
thanks,
was very,
George.
Very complete. I think that's actually one of these rare occasions when I just totally agree with you. I mean, I don't necessarily agree with your ultimate decision on who's going to win, etc., because I think it's just there's a hell of a variables in there. But I do believe that Ott has reached I think this year, maybe towards the tail end of last year, I just think Ott has reached a level of maturity and the way he's approaching things, you know, he's not maybe not getting the results, but he's having some great performances, you know. Again, I mean, I'm viewing it from the point of view of a sort of team manager, and if he was driving for me, I'd be really happy with the way he's approaching everything. You know, he's not throwing, he's not giving anything away. He's maximising everything he possibly can. So maybe, you know, like I say, it's not the best, necessarily the best results, but I think it's just sterling performances from the guy.
Yeah, no, he's this is it. He does have that maturity now to deal with all of these things that are being thrown at him. In the car this year, but I think, you know, if you look to a winner, it's really interesting because we've talked, obviously, as we always do, we've talked to all the drivers, all the team principals, all the technical people before every WRC round, and the one thing that is quite clear from talking to Tom Fowler is that they at Toyota, they do have a small stress about the speed of the Hyundai and the pace that a car's got, certainly between the corners. In terms of pure engine power, Tom says all of the data that they've done looking at all of the cars, it's the Hyundai that's got the best engine right now, and that's why they've gone for an engine upgrade. I mean, in fairness, you would always bring an engine upgrade out just before the real super quick events, wouldn't you, George?
You would. You would. But, so but when we're talking about an engine upgrade, what we're talking about, one or two horsepower, very slightly different characteristics, you'll be trying to get squeeze a little bit. Well, you don't need torque these days because of the electric, but you'll be looking for just to get to that top speed just that fraction bit quicker.
So I said exactly that to Julien Monse, that, you know, presumably torque is less important these days because of exactly what you just said. And he said, yeah, but don't forget, you know, you only get it for 10 seconds and then you've got to regen it. So you do still need that characteristic within the engine. But actually, you're right again that they've both gone for power. It is at the top end of the engine that they're looking for more out of it. So it's going to be an interesting one. Of course it is. And talking to Ermo Arva, who is rally director in Estonia, who knows the roads and understands the cars quite well as well, I said to him, you know, is it a straight race between Toyota Hyundai? And he said, no, absolutely not. He said, looking at the Puma, that will be right in there. And of course, Craig Breen has absolutely flown in Estonia last year. He was right at the races until the sort of final stage, really, when I think there was gap was never sort of bigger than about 14 seconds between him and Calais back throughout the 3 days. And then obviously Greeny lost. He clipped a rock or something, didn't he, in the last stage last year? Hello? Is anybody there?
I was going to say, yeah, it's quiet. We're all hanging on your every word.
Has Luke gone back to sleep?
Absolutely.
No, I'm still here.
There, David.
I don't remember that, I'll be honest.
Don't stop.
I'm respectful of my elders. I've just decided to let them do the talking. When they want to introduce me, I'll come in.
Do you know what, Luke? You should know better now. Just bulldoze your way in.
Yeah, absolutely. Just dive in.
Really my style, to be fair.
But it is. It's going to be wide open, as all of these things are. And as we know with a really fast gravel rally, if you make a mistake early, it's going to be incredibly difficult to make that time back, simply because there's not the number of junctions or slower speed corners where you can be a little bit later, a little bit braver on the brakes. The car's generally going to be carrying a similar amount of speed through medium and high speed corners, so the time's not really there to make up. So we always see that, don't we? We really see really close gaps. And I'm sure after the first day, there'll be just a handful of seconds to throw over the top there.
So when are we expecting the rain then, George? And how is this going to change things?
Rain is expected on Thursday. Well, actually, on Tuesday, believe it or not.
So before the event starts?
Tuesday, we've got a thunderstorm on Tuesday. We've got with a reasonable amount of rainfall. Nothing too heavy, but it's been thunderstorms or thunderstorms. They're hit and miss, and they're not necessarily huge. You know, they're maybe just 15 or 20 kilometres across, so that they can be hit and miss. Nice on Wednesday, the thunderstorm again on Thursday, and it's sort of lunchtime-ish onwards. So all through the afternoon on Thursday. So whatever's happening on Thursday is likely to be a little bit interesting. Mm. And then Friday is just saying drizzle all day, but so little I'm not necessarily sure it would affect the road. Probably because it says it's suggesting 30-40% chance of rain across the whole day. But like I say, just drizzly, maybe a little bit more than drizzle. I think it looks to me like it would be enough to get the place wet.
Mm. But the
road wet, and you know, that just firms up the gravel and just takes that massive disadvantage of running first or second or third on the road. It takes it away.
But it's never quite as big as it in a Finland, because again there's less areas of heavy braking and heavy acceleration. Would that be fair, George? Having said that,
I've not analysed it to that degree, David, so I wouldn't want to particularly comment. All I know is that in Finland, when it rains, the road does debilitate. The road gets a bit softer for every car that passes. And it's an advantage to be first on the road.
That said, New Zealand is generally a fast rally as well. And it always used to, it was really, really difficult, wasn't it, down there, to be first on the road?
It was, but then the road didn't debilitate. The New Zealand roads are full macadam construction. They were all big roads, you know, they're all like, you know, main highways, so you didn't have the little roads like they use in Finland. I've never been to the Estonia event. Is it lots of little roads as well?
Yeah, there's a good mix.
Yeah, so I imagine that they would degrade when they get wet slightly. They soften up a little bit.
Yeah.
Whereas in Finland, the water binds the gravel initially, stops it being so marbly, and then the road gets a wee bit softer.
Yeah. So
more slippery.
I think, you know, the one thing that I would say that is going to be interesting is Robin Perra's approach. Because what does he do now with a 65-point lead in the championship? You know, he does not need a win. He could sit out the next two rounds and still be leading the championship going into Ypres. But the one thing that's also become clear with Calais is that when he feels it, he feels it. And he can push and he can drive at the speed that he doesn't feel he's taking risks. And quite possibly he could be celebrating back-to-back wins on Sunday.
If it's wet enough, I think it's a possibility. Mm. I'm not quite sure. I've never seen rain there, so I'm not quite sure how it binds up.
I appreciate that nudge, Lisa. Thank you.
That was a nudge. I genuinely want to just check you're awake, but also to hear what you think.
No, I am still here. I just had to shut my window. It's a very small room as well, but I wanted to keep the noise out because there's going to be a delivery at a supermarket below me. So I just want everyone to respect the effort that I'm sweating already. But as David said, I think it is, well, it's depressing, to be honest, if you're anybody other than Cali Rovanperä, the championship situation at the minute. And I think the beauty from Cali's perspective is, as David, he doesn't need to win, but that is, if anything, going to boost his chances because there is absolutely no pressure on him at all. He's first on the road, so he can't really be expected to be there. He's obviously won this rally before. He's a defending winner, so there's form there. But if he comes away second, third, even fifth or sixth, it's not going to be a disaster for him. I think we all know that Finland's going to be the big one he's going to try and win this year. Last year, obviously, was a bit of a disaster for him in that regard. And for any rally driver, particularly for a Finn, to win there is almost as important as the championship. So that'll be his focus. But I really don't think we can discount him from the top three at all here, because he's just in that zone where nothing seems to be going wrong for him. Everything is just flowing, and as David said, when he feels it, and I think we all think back to the Croatia Power Stage with this, it's he didn't need to win that rally either. You could have let Tanak win that, but he went for it and he absolutely destroyed him. So it's, I don't know, I'm still just in awe with the guy at the minute. He's just,
yeah,
it's a bit worrying for the future, I'll be honest. I think at some point the novelty might wear off with it, but at the minute I just think it's great to see him, somebody in this bout of form, just doing what they can, and it's up to the rest to catch up.
Do you know, I've got a real disappointment element here. Can I ask how old you are, Luke?
I'm 25 this weekend.
Yeah, I thought you might be.
Hey, happy birthday this weekend.
Because now that I've got to a certain age and you start seeing history repeating itself kind of down the line like that, you sit there and you think, but it's not a bad thing for one person to dominate sport. And it's only the first year of Robin Perra's mighty reign that's coming on. You know, you kind of go back to the Loeb era and you was it a bad thing that he dominated the sport so much? And I'm not going to talk about tennis, George, I know, but in various other sports along the way, you do have people that come along and dominate it. And it's fascinating how fans will absolutely love the person who becomes dominant. And then in Formula One, Michael Schumacher, everyone got sick of him winning everything for a while. And it's so wrong. We should be actually celebrating how brilliant somebody is that they can win against the odds for Robin Perra on a couple of events. There's no way he should have won a couple of those.
I think it depends, doesn't it, Lise? Because if you look back, you know, in the middle of the Loeb era, as you look back now, you'd look back on that and say, crikey, that must have been a fairly long 9 years. But there were years when, say, 6 and 7, when he totally dominated. And was it six or seven? It was 06 when he had the broken shoulder or arm or whatever.
Yeah, fell off his bike. Fell off his one.
Yeah, exactly. That was quite exciting from a sort of novel perspective, wasn't it, towards the end of the year.
He missed Australia, that one.
He missed about the last four rounds.
Yeah.
Marcus slipped off the road in
Australia.
In Australia when he didn't need to.
Yeah, exactly. But then, so that was interesting. But then there were the years where he just dominated and just won everything, which I think seven was, although they didn't win the manufacturers that year. But then you look at 2009, which was an absolute thriller with him and Hirvonen split by a point. So in the middle of all of this domination, there were some epic battles. And perhaps as you look back and just look back through the years and don't look in a bit more detail, you know, it could look a little bit uninteresting. It was sort of the same with Ogier, wasn't it? You know, when he was at Volkswagen, he totally dominated. And then in 17 as well, with the first year with the M-Sport car, he dominated again. But then 18 was a great, great fight.
There's a similar battle between the two of them there, because you think about Loeb actually had his time as part of the Kronos setup as well. Mm. It wasn't just a pure manufacturer, one car. It was more than just one man winning, if you know what I mean.
Absolutely. And I think, Luke, you're right. You know, this there is... not alarm bells ringing at all, because talking to Elvin Evans, Elvin said, you know, Calais had the dream start, absolutely the perfect first half of the year. Okay, Monty perhaps could have gone a little bit better, but it's been great. Who's to say the second half of the year doesn't turn around completely? And that's not wishing any ill will or bad fortune or whatever on anybody. But, you know, we're in a mechanical sport here, and these things can break down. You would probably say that Calais had the rub of the green so far. And I think he has. And we've talked endlessly on this podcast about when you're in that zone, you can push the envelope a little bit harder. You can take more risks and get away with stuff because you've got physically within yourself, you've got that extra bit of capacity to take the risk. And he's there, but he's not going to stay there forever. And let's see. I think Tanak, it's easy to forget that Tanak's won this event. What is it, three times in the last 4 years? He knows these roads. Last year, there was probably more. He put more pressure on himself. He had a bit of an issue early on. And then he really, really tried. And he went off the road and took those two punctures quite spectacularly going into the field. I would be surprised if Wout Tanak makes that kind of mistake again. But local knowledge here is a big deal, particularly with the weather changing. With the weather coming in, he'll understand more about what it's going to do to the roads. Home support is huge, for sure. There's no doubt. I mean, we watched a Grand Prix yesterday with massive support for Max Verstappen. It didn't work, so he finished second. But still, you know, Lewis Hamilton talking about it at the British Grand Prix, it's massive. And when you're out there in Estonia, the crowds are huge. They simply are, and you know, they're all waving one flag.
Yeah,
so that's gonna lift.
They're all back as well this year, which is nice, isn't it? Because we haven't, obviously, the COVID years we haven't had, and we've seen it in promotional events how big a thing it is. And Tanak, he's not just a motorsport hero; he's a sporting hero. I think everybody knows Tanak in Estonia, and that's what's special. Yeah. It really is a whole national turnout. But yeah. I do. You have made me feel a bit guilty now for simply deciding that Cal is going to win the next decade of world championships. But it is, to be honest, I actually.
You could be right.
I could, but Lisa, it's a fantastic point you make, I think, because you're totally right in the sense of when you're living in the moment, you don't appreciate what you're seeing. And it's easy to not, because I guess, as you say, people kind of want a championship fight. But I think the saving grace, and I'm thinking of 2016 here, I think it was 2016. But as long as there's an interesting narrative within the season, if you're lacking a title narrative, I think that's okay. So I think it was in 16, we had about six different winners and six rallies or something. But Ogier...
No, it was 17.
Okay, well,
was it? It was first year of 17 cars, wasn't it? 16 was still.
Well, I'm sure there was the year Ogier completely dominated in the VW, but yet the season was still interesting because he wasn't winning all the rallies. He had the best points accumulation, but one historical thing I will call out on David: 2007 was a great championship year. Loeb did dominate that. Him and Grönholm was a brilliant battle. Criminally underrated season of WRC, in my opinion. but yeah, I think as David rightly mentions, Tanak for me and we said it at the start about 20 minutes ago now in the pod as well, but he is driving at a level now that probably is better than most people realise. I think because of the sort of difficult last 12 months he's had, because his start to the season was slow with various issues, they're not really looking at him as performing that well. But we all know the limitations of his car. I just can't help but feel if, like for like, him and Callie were in exactly the same situation with the car and everything, that this would be just a titanic battle. I said a bit like a satanic there, didn't it? I didn't, I promise. But yeah, it's this one for me, as much as it's not going to be a two-horse race, I'm most interested in Tanak versus Robin Perra. Whether that's what's going to be turning out at the front, I don't know. But it feels like this is Tanak's sort of set, if you like, to use the sport we don't talk about as an analogy, in Estonia. And then Finland, we've got Robin Perra's sort of leg as well. So I think it's going to be interesting to see the two potentially fastest drivers in the championship going out to see who can be quickest on the quickest rounds.
Shall we move on to engines?
Crikey, after not talking at all, he's talked a lot there, hasn't he?
It's good. It's good.
Well done, Luke. Well done.
I was interested in what he said as well, which is always a bonus on the podcast. the Yaris and the i20, I see on our list, it says engine work.
Mm. Yeah, well, we've sort of touched on this already. And there's also some aero coming to the rear of the Toyota as well. So yeah, some mods coming. Nothing really of any significance coming for the Puma. I spoke to Malcolm on Friday from what was there a rainy Cumbria, and he said no, we haven't got a lot. He said, but we have had one of the best week of tests. All of the drivers doing around 200 kilometers in their day, which is always indicative of a good day. You know, if you're getting up around 200k, it means you're not stopping and changing gearboxes and what have you. So he was very upbeat. And obviously, as we touched on there, you know, Craig Breen has driven brilliantly in Estonia in the past. This is, I think, you know, you've written a really brilliant piece, Luke, about Craig on the site, and go and check it out on dirtfish.com, obviously, if you haven't already. This is going to be an interesting one for Craig. You know, I'm not one for bringing pressure to drivers, but in the past couple of years, we've seen Craig Breen driving a rally that's worthy of a win in Estonia. And he's done that in a way where actually there has been pressure on him because he's been out of the car and he hasn't had a lot of gravel experience and he's jumped into something and he's gone on and done it. But also there hasn't been that massive weight of expectation. It's a very difficult one, this, isn't it? Because there's not the expectation because he hasn't been in the car, but there is the expectation because he knows he's got an opportunity to shine. Now, obviously, he's in year one of a two-year program with M Sport. He knows his seat is safe. He needs to just kind of relax about everything, the sort of bigger global picture, and just focus on what we know he can do on fast gravel and get on with it. And for me, he's a driver that could win this weekend, and it would be the most timely win if he could pull it off. Because, okay, he had a great result in Sardinia, wanted to start to build some momentum, and then had a tricky safari after obviously having quite a difficult start to the year. Well, podium in Monte, but then things went a bit south in Sweden. He needs to build some momentum, and a win here would be a superb start. It's funny, within the season, I think we've got a sort of a micro season here of two fast gravel rallies and IPA. And you could look at this and say, actually, this could be Hyundai's micro season because they've got Tanak here, then they've got Tanak who can win and has won in Finland, and then you've got Thierry Neuville in IPA. But it's not quite as simple as that, because Craig Breen can go incredibly well on all those three events. Elvin Evans can go incredibly well on those three events. So, you know, we've moved out of the rough gravel, if you like, into this, to the middle summer bit now. And for me, it's going to be a really, really interesting next three rounds.
I think you're right to mention...
Where's George gone?
He's quite...
No, I'm still here, guys. Okay. I'm still here. I'm just listening in here. Okay. I'm a listener. When I'm not speaking, I'm just listening.
This is making me nervous, though, George.
I'm your biggest fan. I'm your biggest fan, really. Here you go. Yeah,
oh, my God. Watch it. He's going to get the sledgehammer
super
out.
Super fan. We decided last... Luke and I decided last week I was... Yeah, I don't have a piece of 4x2 to tie to your ankles and then hobble you. You watch yourself, Lisa. Just take it.
So you know, for me, it this one's wide open, but it's going to be the start of a really interesting three rounds, and potentially, you know, a chance for Hyundai to redeem themselves. There are still, as we talk endlessly, there are still issues within that team. We've run our story over the weekend about the fact that the drivers, Tanak and Thierry Neuville, called together a meeting with the senior Koreans to talk about what's going on in the team. It's not a particularly harmonious place in there right now. There are lots of issues. You know, one thing that we perhaps overlook is the fact that, you know, there are supply chain crises around the world, and they're hitting motorsport just like they're hitting everyday life. And Hyundai, it would appear, have not got all of the parts that they need at the time that they really need them. You know, they're reprepping parts from Safari that you wouldn't want to be reprepping. And it's impacting on their test and their ability to test. Excuse me. So, you know, to me, it smacks of a team who they're almost asking too much of everybody within that team. Christian Loriot, I'm surprised the guy ever sleeps. You know, he is just working 24/7, as they all are. And this is the galling part, is that we're being critical of them, and there are people in there that are working perhaps harder than they've ever worked in their entire life. And they're struggling to see which way is up right now. George, I'm sure you've been in that position as a team where you can't, you know, they've had a win. They had a win in Sardinia, sorry. But everything is just going wrong, or just not going right. And the harder you try, sometimes the worse it gets.
It's difficult to make a judgment, and certainly, David, I am reluctant to pass judgment on anything like that, because I have been in the situation, and what we're seeing is probably very, very different from what the team, you know, the team members see inside the team. They'll clearly have feelings and knowledge of, you know, what's gone wrong. You know, are there modifications needed in the supply chain? You know, is everybody actually pulling their weight? I mean, usually in a team like that there is, but there'll always be some opinion within the team about what could be done. Drivers having meetings with the Korean bosses, okay. I mean, maybe, you know, I mean, I can't imagine what they would have been saying. I mean, I would have thought they wouldn't have been voicing any lack of support for any active real-world team members that are there, you know, because I'm sure everyone is working really, really hard. And, you know,
I have a feeling, George, they were asking for probably for Andrea Adamo back, because, you know, he was the one guy that sat at the top of that whole sort of hierarchy in the team. And he was a very vocal fella. He was pretty dictatorial in his style of leadership, but he got stuff done. And Julien Moncet is working his socks off, but he's doing two jobs. You know, he's working on the driveline, and he's trying to motivate and bring the team together. And I think they need a single leader. And if that's Julien Moncet, then put him at the top there, but take away the other responsibilities. It's so hard, because everybody there is working so hard. They deserve so much more.
Yeah, that's kind of how I feel. I feel absolutely that. I know what it'll be like in that team. I know that there'll be a huge number of very dedicated people trying to make things happen absolutely correctly. And as always, with every operation, every company, you know, you get a couple of people in there maybe that aren't quite doing as good a job as the rest, and it maybe looks like they're letting the whole thing down. Probably not quite as severe as that, but, you know, that can happen, in which case, you know, that would be the only thing that would be to talk about, is to sort that out. But I mean, you know, I've got no idea why the whole thing changed at the end of last year. You know, that was obviously a very precipitate change. So to say that you want Adamo back, I mean,
okay, yeah, you need somebody back in there to drive the whole thing forward. I wouldn't have thought they would have gone backwards on whatever happened, whether it was Andrea leaving on his own or whether he was asked to leave, who knows. But honestly speaking, you don't go backwards, you move forward, get the next person in.
No, and just to jump in there, George, categorically, we know that Adamo left. Andrea left a visit of his own free will, of his own accord, for his own very, very, very valid reasons. I agree, you know, it's difficult to go back, but they need, something needs to change. And who knows, you know, I've written again over the weekend or the back end of last week that if they come out, if this is a sort of micro three-round Hyundai season, if they come out and win two or three out of three, things look very different. And that picks things up in the team, doesn't it? You get that feeling you're winning again. You know, Monday morning comes around and everybody's got a smile on their face because they've won at the weekend. They're back in the thick of a manufacturer's championship race. Suddenly things don't look quite so bleak. We saw it, you know, we saw the way it lifted them in Sardinia when they were all jumping in the harbour. It was fantastic to see. But what we've got is this roller coaster effect where they've gone back down in Safari. And Safari was a real, real difficult one to pick yourselves back up from. But they've got
only in the context of, you know, it wasn't a great event for them. But in the context of what went wrong, I mean, I think they were very, very unlucky that their air filter particularly seemed to manage to suck it in and get blocked. Their air filters were the same size as everyone else, but their positioning of it is slightly different. And I think they just got, honestly speaking, a bit unlucky. And I mean, I've thought about that. There's no way you could CFD or calculate that out. You couldn't put it in a wind tunnel because, quite frankly, when it was happening, the cars were only doing about 20 kph. You know, it's just that unique situation, and their air intake seemed to be vulnerable. That was the biggest thing of all.
And talking to Monse last week about that, and I said, you know, are you fearful when we go back to Acropolis? He said, you know, Acropolis is a sort of target, a pivotal event in the season. I said, well, you've said that, you know, what do you work when you come out of Safari with such a dismal result? How do you get it right in Acropolis? And he said, well, fortunately in Greece, I don't think we'll have Fesh.
It's a one-off. So, I mean, I don't think so from that point of view. Yeah, I mean, it's you know, it's going to be hard, but you know, I think the team has, as you said at the start, you know, I think Ott Tanak has a brilliant chance of doing incredibly well there. Honestly, and again, honestly speaking, without a doubt, Thierry's, you know, as good as anyone on a fast road, if not potentially every bit as good, matching superior when the chips are down, because the guy can find much more. Depth in his performance when he really needs to. It's a bit scary what he can pull out after he's had a problem. Well, you know, on the face of it, with such a tough season, you know, he's going to go out at the start of that event finding that extra again, right at the start of the event. So, you know, they've got two drivers right at the front as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. Well, absolutely.
Going into the start of the event, road position. Well, I mean, that remains to be seen. Is it wet? Does it affect it just the same? I have no idea.
What do we think of? I'm potentially doing Lisa's job here, so apologies. But what do we think of? Do we think of Solberg? Because for me, I think if it's going to be a couple of rallies where he's going to be able to show his best, Estonia in particular, I think I'm right in saying statistically it's been his most successful WRC rally to date. I don't know. I'm not suggesting you should be on the podium necessarily, or even winning or anything like that. But I think of all events that he can do well, I think this is his chance.
Mm. He's got a lot of experience, hasn't he? He's obviously competed like Kalle in the younger days when he was 14, 15 years old. They were in Estonia, Latvia on these kind of roads. And for Oliver, I can't remember, but it would have been what were we now? So we were 20, probably 2019, was it, when he did. He was in the Polo, and it was the last of the promotion events, and I think he finished seventh overall. And that, for me, was one of the best and the strongest events that he'd done. in one of those cars. It was the year that he was in the American
You're spot on, David. I've just checked our favourite website, EWRC, and he was seventh in 2019 in a polo, so you're bang on.
Yeah. So there was one stage where he beat Marco Martin, and Marco was in one of the 17 cars. He was in a Fiesta. He definitely, Oliver Solberg feels very, very comfortable at that speed and on those roads. So it is a great opportunity for him. I'm not sure how much of a test he had. I think he's been quite badly impacted by these, by the lack of parts and things with the test. So I don't know how much running he had. And that, you know, again, that's a big thing to get your head into gear. You know, you talk to, I used to love talking to Richard Burns and to Robert Reed before they went to Thousand Lakes. Because Robert would say, you know, they, and you'd know this, George, so they had their pre-event test, which could have been 2 or 3 days. And Robert said they always, I can't remember if it was Mahinpa or somewhere like that, there was one stage they would go to, which was really, really quick. And Robert said, you know, Richard always just wanted to go there and you get your head into Finland speed, out of wherever you've been, because it is such a different mindset to drive these cars at that speed. So they had one favorite bit of road that they'd go back to year on year just to get themselves back in the groove, and then they were ready. Of course, you know, those days are long gone now. Okay, actually less so for Toyota and Hyundai, because they've both got permanent test sites in Finland, so they can test 24/7 there. But Oliver hasn't been testing there a lot, so it will take a little while to get your head into that space, won't it?
It definitely will. Okay, he's young and he'll go for it. And obviously, he did have that quite good performance at the Rallycross last week. So he managed to get his head into that fairly quick after Safari. Mm. So I'm sure he will. But there will be an element of getting your head into that. And you know, your Mahinpa, which is a very famous stage, just out to the east of Jyväskylä, northeast. Which was an incredibly fast, wide, big road with lots and lots and lots and lots of jumps in it and lifts and you know, where the car went light for long, long periods of time into the next long corner, into another jump halfway through that corner, into a lift, into another lift, into a small compression and then another lift. It was just kilometre after kilometre. And I think Robert, relaying that, I remember talking to him about that very same thing, and it was just to get your head into the fact, this is where I have to go to. I am out there on that ragged edge, and that's where I have to go if I'm going to take the fight to the Finns. And you're always looking to, you know, best a Finn on a stage, because nothing gives the message that I'm here and I'm challenging you better than a fastest time when nobody was necessarily expecting it, or the first time you get one. Oh, wow. Oh, Richard, we're gonna have to think about him. Might have to lift the game, and you're pushing people into mistakes, maybe. That's the name of the game. So, yeah, I think there's an element of that in Finland, without a doubt. Greg Green having 200 kilometres of testing, very good news for M-Sport, without a doubt.
Yeah.
What a wonderfully evocative phrase you used there, George.
What was
stretch
that?
Stretch a road where the car went light.
Yeah.
That's just such a powerful phrase, because you think, oh gosh, good. Yeah, I know what, I'm not a rally driver, but I know what that feeling is. Mm. I've got one eye on the time. We've got one thing on the list, but one thing that we definitely need to talk about is WRC2.
Mm. Oh, wow. I mean, just the list.
Because that would be amazing. Podcast on this alone.
Yeah, definitely.
It just goes on and on and on. You know, the Sunin and Mikkelsen, Hayden Padden back. Emil Lind on there, Jari Huttunen. Yeah, every event this year has been just sensational, with a huge long list of tremendous drivers, and this is exactly the same. It's going to be great. It's also, we shouldn't forget, it's a junior round as well. So it's, yeah, there's a huge amount to stay around for on the stages and watch further back. But for me, the WRC2 fight, it is going to be, I have to say, I think Skoda has still got the edge, even with the old car. The new car obviously is coming in the summer. So Mikkelsen's somebody who's going to be going well. He's had, was it two engine failures now with his car? Interesting. I mean, this is one thing that, you know, you do have to ask, don't you? They had the same engine failure, we think, on consecutive events. and no other Skoda really is having any engine failures. Is that a factory car? Is that a car that they're giving that little bit of extra to?
I believe all the engines go back to Skoda, don't they?
Well, George, those teams do them themselves. But
the,
you know, an engine's an engine, isn't it? And you know, is Skoda just turning Mikkelsen's engine up just that wee bit more? It's something that's out there and being discussed by all of the Skoda runners and pretty much everybody in the championship. I don't know. He's a factory driver, and there is a small feeling that perhaps his engine has been breathed on. Used to be the way of describing
it. Nice phrase.
Yeah, I don't know. But regardless, you know, if they turned it up, they'll probably need to turn it down a little bit now to get some more reliability out of it, because he needs points.
Well, I mean, one thing's for sure, David, is that they'll know exactly what failed.
Yeah.
And they will be able to identify the reason why it failed. And if they can't, then there's an extraneous factor like fuel incorrect or some other aspect of the car correct. So you'll be able to root cause analysis it through and figure it out. So I would imagine that they will have thrown their weight behind that. And you just wouldn't expect it to happen a third time.
No, definitely not.
No way in the world. Yeah.
The big question though is, can Sunonen in a Hyundai, can Huttunen in a Ford, can these boys match the Skoda?
Well, we're going to find out, and it's going to be great.
Is Hayden going to be following spring that? Surprise?
Yeah. Hayden's somebody who's had plenty of recent gravel
tinkering
experience.
Time.
Yeah.
Yep.
He's very, very good on these fast roads,
absolutely.
Obviously.
Yeah.
So,
and great to see
him
back.
A little bit of match practice. But
not so much, you know. Done quite a lot down in New Zealand.
Yeah, but in terms of you know the competitive element. I mean,
yeah.
We know that Hayden always pushes himself on every single stage, so it's maybe a little bit unfair to say that. But ultimately, that competition is the thing that really sharpens you up.
Mm. I've got to say, I look forward to always. Hayden's somebody we've known for years, and he's such a good guy. Just a genuinely interesting and decent fella, lovely fella to talk to, and he's from the right part of the world. We do like a bit of New Zealand, and he also brings John Keenard with him as well, who is one of the nicest people, and makes a pretty good bottle of wine as well.
Yeah, I never understand John Keenard, having known him very, very well, I understand why he went back into competition and he loved it, but crikey, to come back and at the bleeding edge of that, you know, it's great fun for a young guy. But I always remember Arne Hertz going into that Mahimpa stage in Finland with Hannu Mikkola. I think it was in the year that they did it with the Toyota, 94, 95, something like that. They went back and did a couple of rallies. I did one rally with Toyota. It was a gift from Uwe Andersson to Hannu Mikkola to celebrate the 1970, was it 1974 win in Finland when Hannu won with the Corolla. Quickly, Luke.
I'll say yes. Yes tentatively, but I'm going to Google now.
Anyway,
EWRC
right
now.
We got Hannu in a factory Toyota, and he experimented with the as Toyota called it at that time, the fresh air system, which was we now call anti-lag. So the car sounded like it was some sort of major street battle in an urban environment at that time. But the car was, you know, very, very quick. It was a full spec car, as you imagine. And I always remember Arne Hertz saying that the run through Mahimpa, he came out and he said, "Oh, George," he said, "I'd forgotten. I knew Mahimpa was going to be tough, but my God, we went through there." And you know, relatively speaking, they were a long way behind the leaders. And I'm thinking, God knows what everyone else is doing, because we came through there. I would have said that was pretty well all you could get. And we're, you know, 10, 12 seconds down. How I've no idea, but what the rest are doing, I don't want to know, but I just don't want to know. I don't want to be in the car with them. What I'm pointing out is that actually, it's maybe not just as much fun as we all might think it might be. This is ragged edge stuff.
In these events, there's massive pressure in the car as well. You know, when the car's carrying the speed that it is, you know, 100, 110 miles an hour over blind crest, you have to be absolutely spot on with everything. There's risk in every stage and every corner, but there's always just a little bit more when the speed's that bit higher.
So quite why John Kennard enjoys that so much starts to, you would have thought, maybe he's basically sort of, you know, promised to retire a couple of times, but he keeps coming back for a little bit more and to go to Finland. As a driver, I have to say, I would quite like to go and do Finland again and the likes of Estonia. But if I was co-driving, I don't think I want to go into that car. Although, I just need to focus a little bit harder on it. I mean, you know, when you're co-driving and you get the notes right and you've got everything flowing really well, the feeling is also just as almost as good as being a driver, because you are part of the mechanism that's making that car go fast. There's something actually quite special about it.
I've got an answer. I'll keep this very quick before I get told off by Lisa for taking too long. But 1975 for Finland. But a very, very, very quick anecdote on John Kennard, which I thought was interesting from my weekend. I was at the Nicky Griss stages following Max McRae, who, by the way, had a fantastic result to end his European tour, third in Junior British Championship, which is actually very, very impressive considering the pace and the experience those guys have. But I was chatting to Keaton Williams, who was helping out with some trackers, and sort of classic sort of conversations, trying to get a bit out of him. He wasn't taking my bait, to be honest. he's too clever for that. But he was talking about sort of potentially where his career might go, because at the minute he's in the ARA with Brandon Semenuk, which he's more than happy with, and that obviously returns this weekend as well, so keep an eye out for that on dirtfish.com. But he was mentioning that he's got plenty of time. Why? Because John Kennard is still there in the WRC. So he's like, well, if John Kennard can do it at his age, I've got nothing to worry about. So he's a new yardstick, I think, for career longevity.
No, that's a very good point, and a very good point about ARA, Luke. Obviously, New England is coming this weekend. So the likes of Ken Block, Travis Pastrana, Barry McKenna's back as well, isn't he? He's missed a couple of rounds.
Is.
Are we still expecting him to start in the Fiesta?
I guess that's always... he does have a habit sometimes, Barry, of... And to be fair, I'm saying like it's his fault. It's not. He's just got that much on at work. Nice. But he wants to do the rally. He doesn't always have the time. But yeah, it should be a great battle. And it's getting very important championship-wise as well, because it's 6 scores from 9 counts. So at this point, it's kind of whoever wins... It's all about who has the most wins there, and Travis has none. So he needs to send it this week. And we know when Travis does that, it doesn't always go well for it, bless him. So I think it's going to be really interesting.
It is, and we send our absolute best to obviously everybody competing there, but especially our colleague, friend and colleague, Michelle Miller, who will be co-driving for Lucy Block. I'm not sure if there are any other of our colleagues, or I'm sure there's lots of graduates from Dirtfish competing in Maine this weekend. So all the best to them. It is, it's great. You know, I did Ohio the last round and just couldn't get enough of it. It's a great championship. It's going to be a great weekend.
I would love to be there at that. I'd love to be driving it, but I'd just love to be there and see it. I think it would just be amazing. They seem to have such great rallies. So competitive, such great character on the stages. Big roles. Yeah.
I can't wait for the time that we'll be over there, George. Yeah. That they will be flown over for it. Also, every time you say Maine, I always think Stephen King. So just think of a rally with a Stephen King twist. That could be pretty scary, couldn't it?
Never a fan of Stephen King. I've got to be honest.
Okay. Never read a single book. No. Never read a single book.
Okay. His
movies
but you
were
will,
awful.
You
so
will,
there
yeah,
you go.
But you will be a fan of his work. The Green Mile?
Yeah, true.
I've got a whole load of others, but we haven't got time to get them in. So I am just going to say thank you very much for your time, chaps. Like and subscribe if you have enjoyed listening to our humble offering, Spin the Rally Pod. Don't forget to subscribe with your podcast provider. Right, it's Roo. That in English translates to write us a review if you so feel like it.
That was a slightly COVID-impacted sentence, wasn't it?
The mouth ahead of the brain, I think. That we're on Twitter, Instagram, at Dirtfish Rally. TikTok, we're going to get David to get his head around that and start producing some TikTok videos.
Oh, yeah. Give it to me. And look out for the bug as well. Let's put the bug up.
Well, now, yes. Now, I have to say, while you guys were chatting there, I was just having a little... little having a bit of a little tinker. I'll just send that back to you that way. Maybe we'll pop that one on social media as well. You've been listening to
that's fantastic. That has to go there. I'm sorry, that's fantastic.
Why would you do that?
George Donaldson and Luke Barry. I've been Lisa O'Sullivan, the Humble Rally Fan. I hope you will join us again.